This book will actually make you think big. But think about that. What does that mean to actually think big?
Hello, champions, and welcome to another episode of Champion Reads, the podcast where we talk about best-selling books by best-selling authors and the principles therein. My name is William Blake, and today we have with us Ian Sturmer, who is our co-producer, as well as the founder of Champion Circle, John Kovacs Jr. And today we're wrapping up the series of The Magic of Thinking Big by David Schwartz. And with everything that we've talked about, from the mindset of thinking big to taking action to really deep diving into the perspective and the goal setting portion of it, we're now going to go into the more practical side, as well as what David calls the five murdering weapons of success. So we're going to jump right into those different five. And those different five, let me just quickly pull up the awesome book. We have self-depreciation, security-itis, competition, parental dictation, and last but not least, family responsibility. So, you know, we can dive into any of those five, but let's start out with the first one, self-depreciation. Before I even say anything, Ian or John, what are your guys' thoughts just initially on self-depreciation?
You know, probably my ideas aren't that good, so I'm going to let John go first.
Nah.
That was very self-depreciating. That was very well done. I tip my hat to you, sir. You know, we've covered a lot of books, and this topic comes up a lot because it is all about the way that you treat yourself. And, you know, in many other books too, they talk about positive self-talk and using that to overcome challenges, over to be able to lift yourself up, build the confidence you need. Therefore, it's a very, very effective tool to diminish yourself and make yourself smaller if you depreciate a lot. So yeah, this is an obvious topic if you want to be someone who thinks outside the box and does things outside the realm of normality. And I think that we get to experience that.
Yeah, I think so. It's so easy to put ourselves down or think we can't do something or not recognize the achievements that we make. I had a discussion with a friend a little while ago, and she was about to go on a radio show and kind of tell her story. And before that, she would say, well, you know, it's not that much to say. I don't know what to do. There's nothing about me. So I started talking to her about her experiences, and she happens to be a friend of both of us, or all three of us here. Sorry. So I won't mention her name, but said, you know, you came here from another country. You got a bachelor's and two master's degrees. She started her own business. You know, she's achieved all of these successful things that she didn't realize what she had done. Now, between the three of us here, I don't think we have any master's degrees. So she's got three of us beat right there. But she just was thinking, well, anybody can go to school. Anyone can do that. That's not special for me. But when I told her story, she recognized that she did accomplish things. There was more to her than she recognized, because she was just putting down her accomplishment as, you know, it's nothing, anyone can do that. So sometimes I think to avoid that self-depreciation, we need to step back and tell ourselves our own story. and put it in the best light. And I know I've done that myself, and I've been pretty surprised at how awesome I am, because I didn't think I was that much until I put it in the right perspective. So tell yourself your own story to avoid that self-depreciation. There's my advice for now.
And how important is it? I remember back 5 years ago when I first started that those thoughts would come into my mind. It's like, I don't have the knowledge to go into this industry. I failed before. Why am I not going to fail again? I haven't gone into sales. Why do I think I'm going to be good at it? Like, these negative thoughts kept going over and over and over in my head. But it took someone else telling me what I've already done and what I can do to knock me out of my head. That's why I love Champion Circle, where we got champion members to as a group to help knock some sense into me as well as each other, and to really come at it with that third party, I don't know if it's advice, but third party perspective of saying, dude, you're already doing so much. You what you think is normal is great for other people. And for us, I know I've gotten caught in the mind trap of, if it's something I can do, everyone can do it. And it's a really hard mindset to sit on. Because if you really think about it that way, then you're just going to always keep yourself as average and never see your true worth. But when you think big, right, we're talking about the magic of thinking big. When you think bigger, when you have other people in your group who can show you that you've already done some great things, as well as you have plenty of potential that you can still go after, it's humbling. And it's so motivating and mind-blowing.
You said something really interesting there, Willie. If I can do it, anyone can do it. And I think that's actually a good starting point. I'm probably going to offend somebody out there when I say this, but if you can read, you can cook. If you open up a cookbook and you follow what the recipe says, if the three of us all do it exactly what the recipe says with the same type of oven, we're going to get the same result. So I think the first step is, if we're doing it exactly following directions. But the first step in avoiding self-depreciation is to stop saying, I can't do it, and anyone can do that. And I'm part of anyone, so I can do that. And I think that's a first step of not doing something. Then we can build up to the greatness and how we're unique and what we can add to it to make it something better. But before we get there, we need to stop and say, if anyone can do it, I can do it. If I can do it, anyone can do it. And then we can stop destroying ourselves, and then we can move to the building phase.
Yeah, there's definitely two sides to this coin. You can use it as a positive, or you can use it as depreciation, right? And the more you use it as depreciation, it becomes something where your norm is like everyone else's. But if you say it like, wow, they did it, so I can do it, that's appreciating. That's giving yourself permission to say, yeah, I can do that, or I can accomplish that. And so it becomes a two-sided coin. I was literally having a conversation yesterday with a friend, and I said, for public speakers, it's always the bottle or the glass is half full, but for everyone else, it's half empty, or I am halfway towards the front of the bus, or I am halfway towards the back of the bus. Whatever is your positive or negative, you have to learn to not use it in the negative, but to use it as a way to build yourself up, your confidence. Because I'll tell you what, I have done some silly things in my life, like jumping from a fence to a trampoline to see how far I could reach. And, you know, the only reason why I ever even endeavored that was because I believed I could, because I had confidence that I could jump from a fence and land on a trampoline. That always gave me some interesting confidence as a kid. And I think a lot of us go through that confidence experience. So I think that, yeah, the way you look at it is also part of your attitude.
Well said. When you said glass half empty and full, I thought about And even if you say it's half empty, you can still take it as a positive. Like with my bottle, I'm trying to drink a gallon of water a day. If it's half empty, that means I've drank in, goodness, my dyslexia is hitting hard. A lot of water has entered my mouth. Yes. And so, it, John, I love that because it goes back to, absolutely, it's about the mindset. It's about how you think about it. You can think that a million things are wrong, or you can think a few things are right. And if you think a few things are right, that's going to get you to where you want to go.
Sometimes it only takes one thing being right to be where you want to go. So if there's one thing right, be thankful you have that one thing right. Whether the glass is half full or half empty, if there's a drop of water in there and I'm thirsty, then I'm on my way. I've got what I need to get started.
Absolutely. Let's transition over to two more. So the second and third, we have security-itis, where David says in the book, persons who say, I've got security where I am, use the security weapons to murder their dreams. And then the third one is competition. The field is already overcrowded. People in that field are standing on top of each other. Our remarks, which kill desire fast. So for Ian and John, out of those two, which one pops out in your life that has affected you the most that you've overcome?
I was doing good until you said that I've overcome. I'm going to jump to security-itis because that's one that I am struggling to overcome now. If life is fairly good where I'm at, why do I need to work harder? Why do I need to push that? And I'm going to give a short example. Years ago, one of my jobs, I managed a gas station convenience store. And I had a lady who worked with me, who worked the graveyard shift. And she would travel about half an hour drive, 40 minute drive to work every night. Now, little backgrounds, gas station graveyard shift is always hiring. If we are fully staffed and somebody comes in and says, I can work graveyard shift, we hire them. Doesn't matter if we need them or not, because it's so hard to get graveyard shift. She would pass, I don't know, 100 gas stations on her way to work. She could have gotten one closer to her house, could have saved her an hour drive a day, price of gas, more time in her life and all of that. But she kept driving here, and she'd been working at this gas station for 10 years because she was secure. She didn't want to take the effort. I'm kind of putting her down. Hopefully she doesn't ever hear this. But she didn't want to take the effort to make a change, even though it would have given her more money in her pocket simply by not spending it on gas, more time, more sleep, all of those things, because it was okay. It wasn't that bad. Why make a change if life is okay? And part of that, what I started there was self-depreciation. There's a negative of life is bad, so I have to change. And there's a positive, life could be better, so I want to change. And I think we have to kind of move along that spectrum from life is not so bad, so I can live with this, to realizing there's more we can have. And security, living, is not enough. We have to grow, achieve. That's what it is to be human, is to move forward. Otherwise, we'll never be satisfied with life, I should say. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Mine would be, when I think of security-itis, I remember back when I was first working produce at Walmart, and it was okay. Like, I had friends there that I had with coworkers, and the pay was decent. My boss wasn't a complete nuthead, and it was a good environment to just stay comfortable, stay neutral. And it wasn't until someone came in for me to realize that, you know, success and failure is like on a pendulum. And I don't know if it's success and failure, but you have, you're, let's see if I can match my phone. You're swinging back and forth. And so the top up here is where you're working hard and you're getting where you need to go. Then back here is where you're at the bottom of the barrel and you feel like nothing's going for your life. In the middle, you're hitting that comfortable spot. And sometimes you can go from there up to the success and you're like, awesome, I got this. But sometimes in order to get that momentum, to be able to push yourself out of your comfort zone, you need to get a little bit further back in the barrel, scraping it, to then swing yourself to get to where you need to go. And so anyone who uses the excuse of, oh, I gotta gain a couple more pounds before I lose the weight, or I gotta empty my bank account and hit bankruptcy before I can get financially stable. Well, if that's the case, get there as quick as you can so that you have more time to then become the successful person that you want to be and whatever successful you define as in your life. But if you're sitting in that comfort spot, sometimes you can just go and hit where you need to go and people have that discipline. And sometimes you need to swing back in order to swing forward.
I like the discussion of pendulum because it really is a perspective, and you can allow one thought or perspective to totally weigh you down, but you could also have it lift you up. And I agree wholeheartedly. Some people are motivated by futuristic goals, meaning they can begin a step two to their goal process by a certain date. But I have found personally, in my own experience, that waiting until the timing is right, the perfection is there, the, oh man, well, I can do this if I weighed only this much, or if I only had $1 million, then I could do something. And that is what I have found to be the security-itis that causes a lot of people to future their success and basically put themselves on the bench rather than in the game. Because if you put yourself on the bench, nothing can happen. No productivity can come about. You've given yourself an out. And a lot of people will hate to admit that, but it is giving yourself an out. And when you do that, you now have told yourself that, you know what, it's okay if I don't do what I need to do. And I'm going to stop right there and pause, and for the record, and I'm just going to lean in and I'm going to say, no, stop that. Like, literally stop that. Your greatness and your success isn't just about you. It's about having the rest of the world benefit from you thriving. And that is the ripple effect of you being an all-star, of you being a champion, of you being somebody who's living their best life, their best ways. And when you deprecate yourself or deprive yourself, that's the better word. I don't know what deprecate means. I just threw that out there. When you deprive yourself of your success, your greatness, yourself, you deprive others of being blessed by you as well. So take that to heart. I don't mean to, you know, call out the world and our listeners and say, shame on you. No, I'm not that kind of preacher, but I do want you to understand that by you playing small is not serving the world. So if you need security, you know, reevaluate what you're doing and how you're doing it, because that security is already there. I was sitting in the audience at a really large tech conference once, and the amazing, the famous, I almost said Steve Young. Steve Young was speaking, and he said something so profound. And he said, you already have the platform for success. And I remember hearing that, and it was so close to the mantra that I live by and the Champion Circle lives by, which is everything you need is already inside you. Steve Young said, you already have the platform for success. Now launch. And that was like the invitation to go for me in so many areas of my life. And if I ever get the chance to meet Steve Young, I will tell him about that, because it really ignited some fires under my shoes and led to some great stuff. But yeah, that's my addition to this quick conversation about that, because you can't wait. waiting is definitely gonna murder. It's a murder weapon. Murder. I love that phrase. It's a murder weapon to success.
Yeah, just want to throw out a quick thing there that you were saying, and to piggyback on that, I think the twin brother of security-itis is fear of failure. If I don't do it, I won't fail. I'm good enough where I am. If I take a step, I could fail, so I can be secure in a little bit. And if I risk a little more, I may lose what I have. So that fear of failure, that desire for comfort, really are two sides of the same coin.
Yeah. Wow, you two just whoa, big explosion. Just several truth bombs there. I didn't want to interrupt anyone's flow. Just so many truth bombs that we just dropped. Because just like David saying, with everything that's going on, the success murder weapons, all of them really come back to you're just making an excuse to do what you know you need to do just because it's uncomfortable. That's really what it comes down to. Whether it's security-itis, whether it's self-deprecation, competition, we didn't talk too much about that, but most people know about it. Like, it's an excuse. Yeah, sure, it's overpopulated sometimes, but a lot of the times, there's crappy products out there. And it's just waiting for someone as passionate as you and as of a champion as you to go out there and change the industry. So everything just falls back on excuses. I want to transition to, if I can, the fourth one as we getting closer to the close of this, parental dictation. I luckily didn't have much of an issue with this growing up because my parents were very supportive of me and what I did. But I know that as I've gotten older, that the expectation for me to go into being a doctor or a lawyer or a vet or accountant or something that makes a lot of money right now is something that people are like, you need to do this instead of waiting 5 or 10 years to build something that will get up to that amount. So I'd love to know both of your thoughts on this fourth success killer.
I'm going to start out then. I think that when I first read this, I was kind of thinking about when I was a kid. But recently in life, I've been kind of thinking about where I am and where I'm trying to go and what I want to be when I grow up still. And realizing how much of the challenges I'm facing are because of my parents when I grew up. Now, I don't want to say that, you know, my parents did it. You know, I had great parents, wonderful there. But there's a way I was raised that still is a big part of me. And it influences the decisions I make now. And, you know, overall, they're mostly wonderful and great. But there's a few things that pop up. Say, you know what? I think that's because all the time growing up, I heard this. So I thought that's how I had to live life. And I don't have a great example to throw out there. Maybe, you know, I grew up when there was a big famine in Africa and all the parents were taught to say, eat all the food on your plate because there's children starving in Africa. And somehow we thought that by eating all of our peas, that would help someone else to not be starving, which made no sense, but we just accepted it at that point. And I think there's logical fallacies that we were taught growing up that we hold on to in some way. And it's not necessarily blaming parents for that. And as a parent of grown kids now, I'm looking back and saying, did I do that? But I think we need to look at how we grew up and the perspective we had on things as a child and stop and say, are those realistic perceptions today? Or do I need to reevaluate based on the knowledge and experiences I have now and learn from the good and move on from the bad?
Yeah, I'll jump in there and add to that. I love what you said, Ian. The the most irresponsible thing we can do is blame others for our own feelings and experiences. The most responsible thing we can do is take ownership. And I've learned this lesson the hard way. It is very, and I hate to throw out my own generation under the bus, but it is very millennial-like to blame their parents for the way they are. And I will say that although that is a very common occurrence, that is also the reason why millennials have more therapists than any other generation currently. And they are starting to seek help, which means they're getting the help that they need. But, you know, it's interesting because anytime you see your circumstance as somebody else's fault, is when you're not thinking outward. And I don't mean to turn this onto you and say like, it's your fault. Like, duh. What I'm trying to say is like ownership leads to progress. And a lot of us, you know, we can place that on our parents, but this gets into a whole nother conversation. And I'd like to invite our listeners to go and review the episodes in which we discussed the book Outwitting the Devil, dictated by Sharon Lecter and written by Napoleon Hill, because in that book, we talk about wanderers, okay? The people who are drifters. And if you continue to drift, meaning you don't think for yourself on all occasions, then you'll have no self-awareness and you'll have no idea about what's really driving your ship. And if you want to really be the captain of your own vessel, then ownership is the first step. Parents do their best. And if you didn't have great parents, then just ignore that last comment I made and say, well, I get to do my best, because they will do what they can and what they will in the moment and with the resources they have. And the best way to say this is, you know, you'll find out when you become a parent, I am sure, you know, and that's just part of the process. But at the same time, recognize that the people around you helped you in every aspect of your life, even if it was a negative, that helped you grow stronger, that helped you gain a different awareness and knowledge tool set to be able to accomplish and to overcome great challenges in this world. So yeah, I appreciate you guys bringing this one up, because I do have a very strong opinion about it, but you know, I do, that opinion does separate me from a lot of my generation and other generations too, because it is something that becomes an excuse for a lot of people if they'll let it. And that is such a murdering weapon to success.
Yeah, it really is. I'm going to bring, we can stay on this topic, but I also want to bring in the fifth one, which is family responsibility. Because we're all we're talking about family. We talked about, you know, our parents, but my mind jumps to my kids and the family that I'm building. Because it's easy to say, for me to say, oh yeah, I got three girls, I got a wife. It's easy for me to say, oh, I'll wait 5 years for me to be able to have enough time to do it. Time to build the business, time to start saving, time to do whatever it is. More and more, I'm realizing that the more, one, more kids I have, the more busy I am. But two, the further it goes along, like as they get older, sure, there might be different things that I save time on, but then more of other things are also brought up. So that excuse of I'm going to have time in the future when my family grows up, it man, this hits home for me. It's not plausible. You're going to be busier in the future. Nothing's going to just be free. Maybe once all your kids are in college and graduate and whatnot and building their own families, you might have it. But then you might be 60, 65 by that point. It's like, well, shoot, all my youthful years are gone. So, yeah, just don't make that an excuse. Don't make that excuse for you. You're in 5 years, time's going to continue on. In 5 years, you're going to still be with the people that you love and your family. Why not start today? Why not have 5 years of experience 5 years from now? Than starting then and wishing you started today.
So we're all speechless with that.
Yeah.
You're right. That's the other truth bomb you should be doing right now. It's, you know,
boom. My laptop was just like processing. My laptop was blown away. It took a little bit for it to process that.
Well, life, it takes us a while to process things too, but sometimes we need to get started now. So when it processes in a few seconds, it'll go. I'm trying to make a segue in this. I was thinking something, I'll try and do this kind of quick, but a lot of these things came together to me with something each of you just said. And so I'm older than both of you. My parents were baby boomers. My grandparents lived through the Depression. And in the Great Depression, you know, that was eat everything on your plate because we don't know if there's another meal. There was a very much a not a scarcity mentality. There was scarcity. It was just a real thing. And the idea of reusing and being careful of what you waste and all these things carried through from my grandparents to my parents. My parents both grew up on farms where my grandparents went to work, but there was still a small farm because they felt they needed that extra security around them. And some of that's moved into me and my generation from my parents, that idea of you need to have security, you need to rely on yourself. The way the parents taught us based on what they lived through, which may or may not really be as true in the next generation. And that, again, the parental dictation to the family responsibility and are we, what are we doing for our family? And is it the best way we're helping our family? All of those carry through. And I think it goes to the last generation teaches on their experiences. And I think biologically, I'm old enough to be each of your fathers. So my generation passes on to your generation what we learned from my parents. And all of that changes. So I'm going to kind of go into the family responsibility of that. We need to stop blaming the past or taking false lessons from the past and saying, what do we need right now? And how can we start today with a new direction that's going to be right? And it takes some self-evaluation, but it also takes just some gumption. Like the wonderful Mr. Blake has recently made some changes in his life, given up some security to chase after a dream that's going to be there to better raise his family and take care of his family. And he personified overcoming all of these through his recent life story, which makes you a hero to me, Willie. And I think you've just been a great example of all of that and saying, this is how I can overcome all of these because I have a dream of a better life for me and or for you, and especially for your family, which is the most important thing for you. And I think we should all watch Willie and look at his life and podcast as well to gain knowledge and see a real life example of how important these principles are and the changes they can make in our lives. So I'll give a kudos to you.
Thank you for that. John, as we're closing up, what are your last thoughts on this conversation?
Yeah, final thoughts. I love this conversation, and I iterate what Ian said and what you've said today, and it's powerful. Be aware. Literally wake up. Wake up from your subconscious movements and your just allowing life to live the life to take over, because as you take over and take control of your life, you will be able to combat the things keeping you from the things that you most want to achieve and accomplish. And it's so easy to do that, or simple at least, if you look at it from the right lens and perspective. So you do have what it takes. And this is a very valuable lesson to learn and a great reminder for that.
And to finish off with that, you're already at the next level that you need to be. Like you already have the skills, the experience that you need to get to the next stage you want in life. So for you listeners, you champions, just start taking that next step and you got it. Thank you guys for joining us. This has been another awesome episode of Champion Reads. We are super excited that we were able to wrap up this book, The Magic of Thinking Big, and very excited also for our next book, The Alter Ego Effect by Todd Herman, which, as I've read it, has been pretty wonderful. So stay tuned to the next episode. If you found inspiration in this episode, go ahead and subscribe to our podcast as well as YouTube channel, mychampioncircle.com. You can also go to mychampioncircle.com web browser to be able to go to our website, and there you'll find links to all our social media, as well as links to our mastermind, accountability, coaching, and everything in between. So until next time, champions, continue to be awesome. Continue to be the champions in your life. And remember, you have the power to do what you need to do. So go ahead and do it. We'll see you later.